Thanks for listening to Outcast World. You lock your front door, don't you? You wouldn't go out and leave the front door open. Well, that's essentially what you're doing when you're not using a VPN. Right now, your data is being tracked, stored, and sold by loads of people. For a lot of people that are listening to this show, that is not just annoying, it can also be very risky. NordVPN fixes it. It's fast, it's reliable, it's number one for consumers, and it takes less time to set up than ordering a takeaway. Outcast World listeners can get NordVPN for under £3 a month. That is up to 75% off. Just go to outcastworld.net. The link's at the top. Turn it on. Forget about it. Make yourself safer online with the number one NordVPN for under £3 a month at outcastworld.net.
On today's episode...
Are you trying to work that out in therapy as well? I'm not trying to sound glib about this, but it's like, what is in the driver's seat? Why am I doing this?
The wise self we talk about. The wise self is the one driving the car. I think that they'll be my, you know, young Joey is sitting on in his lap and they're like kind of... They know what to do, and I'm, you know, the self, and I'm standing by, ready to, you know, protect and you know, make sure that we, like, you know, don't crash or anything.
Wow, would you listen to that? That is unbelievable. It clearly is the start of my British bank holiday weekend. Honestly, it's absolutely hidden down here in Edinburgh, like it is across much of the UK at the moment. So, I am clearly stood outside last Friday of the fringe, and you can feel it, not just the weather. The numbers are up these last 2 days, and there's a bit of a final rush on, and every artist in the city is out making the most of what the social scene, getting the last bit of promo done, doing that last bit of networking. Everyone is absolutely exhausted, wired, tired, the works. One eye on the finishing line. Yeah, and we've been highlighting some of the best queer artists and comedians here at the world's biggest arts festival all month. And today's is a genuinely fascinating one. Joey, I don't know why I decided to do this outside. Joey Jennings has come in to do the whole of August with Little Pink Dress. It's an absolutely astounding piece, really, what it's based on. Many things that many of us as queer people have experienced, or our friends who've been through some of these things. It's a queer country music crossover. There's a bit of dark comedy in it, and it goes places where a lot of you will have a lot of time for. Take a listen to my chat with the lovely Joey Jennings.
Queer politics.
When Farage says jump, Labour might say how high.
And it's not true. It's offering people false hope.
Sex.
Dating apps have become a breeding ground for the worst of human behaviours.
And culture.
What do you want, homie? We get together, we be simple. Simple. Be simple for me.
He will, like, go nosh himself off.
This is Outcast World.
The show is Little Pink Dress, and there's a real Little Pink Dress at the centre of this, isn't there? Tell me about the day that you found the Little Pink Dress. Tell me the story.
Yeah, so, well, the whole thing really began in 2020, in May. It was kind of around my birthday. I was in a pretty low headspace at the time. And I just, one night, really, really early in the morning, I guess, it was like around 3 or 4, I was still up. I couldn't sleep, and I just started writing this song, which is ended up being the first song in the show, that kind of has all the threads of the story in the show in this one song. And then I went to bed and woke up and wrote the second song, and it just kind of all kind of, you know, snowballed from there. And most of the songs were written that summer in 2020. And a lot of it is about my relationship with my mom. I'd say the three touchstones are, like, you know, being an actor in LA or pursuing a dream in LA, and being gay, you know, growing up gay, and then also my relationship with my mom. And when I was kind of, when I saw my mom and I told her about what was going on, she said, well, if I was writing a one-man show, I would definitely write about your Little Pink Dress. And I said, I was like, oh, I didn't really think of that. So it actually was her idea to include this little pink dress that I used to wear as a little kid. I used to sleep in it. I used to dance in it. I used to, you know, do everything in it, especially just in the privacy of my own room, as a young, like, you know, 6-7 year old, very much into the Spice Girls, very much into, like, you know, Britney Spears, Celine Dion, Cher. And yeah, so Little Pink Dress, the song Little Pink Dress, I'd say is like the heart of the show. It's very cross genre. It's the music is country rock. So, but it's a lot of musical theater. It's a lot of, there's like traditional folkloric Sicilian music. There's, a Christmas song. It kind of runs the gamut, but it's, I'd say country rock is the through line.
You were a working actor in LA with like proper credits and everything. You just mentioned before about that version of you. What was that version of Joey like?
Ooh, good question.
Sounds like it was different.
It was. You know, I think that version of Joey really, really wanted to, man, I don't know. You know, I really pursued the serious actor of LA dream for a long time, you know, a little over 10 years, and it is exhausting. It's really draining. It really killed my spirit. And yeah, in 2020, I remember thinking like, okay, if I'm gonna do this, I want to like redefine what it means to be a performer. I want to do a show. I want to get in touch with that, like, you know, my inner child, really. The reason I started doing theater as a young kid, you know, I grew up, you know, watching, you know, a lot of shows on like ABC Family and like, you know, the Disney Channel, and just, you know, that's, I don't know. LA really changed too with like, you know, social media and stuff. And God, I don't know. That is really hard for me to answer because it's such a like, it was dark.
It looks like it's opened a box, that.
Yeah. It was definitely a dark time. I was, you know, also drinking a lot. And other things, and just, yeah, I was really, But yeah, I moved to New York in 2025 last year. Yeah.
What drove the move to New York? Just fresh start.
What? I think exactly that, like wanting to redefine myself as a performer. I think doing this show was a big, you know, reason why, but yeah, I got sober in 2023 before recording all the music, and then got in therapy in early 2024, and then did a year of that pretty intensely, and then did, and was on the fence about moving the whole time, and then moved to New York, and honestly, it's been really great. It's been like really stimulating. I felt like living in LA was like swimming around in an open wound, I'd say.
Okay, yeah, I can understand that. And as soon as a lot of things like that are tied to people, aren't they? And when the people that kind of often cause them kind of things aren't there anymore, I just feel like it becomes easier.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I definitely feel more aligned spiritually and culturally and creatively in New York, I'd say, at the moment. I definitely love seeing people. I feel like in LA, you really, I don't know, it's just really hard to, I feel like in LA, you are ashamed for having a dream. And then in New York, you're kind of like, it's kind of embarrassing if you don't have one. You know what I mean?
Right. So the show is it's about a kid who tries to make it in Hollywood. And it sounds like your idea of Hollywood was set as a kid from, like you said, like Disney Channel and this kind of thing. And then you get to it and it's nothing like that. And it leaves you a kind of like, there's the wound is the distance between what you thought it was going to be and what it was like. And that, yeah, I can feel that. So Hollywood did it ever feel like it was making you into someone else? I think that's what I'm trying to say here. Did you feel like it was trying to make you into somebody else and you didn't feel comfortable in that role?
Absolutely. I do think that, like, I was kind of always trying to play this like straight character. It definitely affected, I think, my relationship with, like, my sexuality is crazy. You know, I'm gay, and, like, yeah. I think that I was often, like, put in or auditioning for roles that were, like, straight characters, as much as I was for gay, too, but, like, I just think that, like, I was, I don't know, I was constantly, like, fighting this idea to be, like, I don't know, like, a hyper-masculine version of myself, and I think that that's, like, yeah. a lot of where, like, the country music kind of comes in. I feel like there's a really funny, like, juxtaposition between, like, masculine and feminine in country music. And
really,
and
I always think of country music as being hyper masculine. And this is why, for me, what you've decided to do is so creatively interesting. You've got the undercurrents of hyper masculinity within country music, and then what you're bringing to it. And it's happened, it seems, at that point that you left LA for Brooklyn in 2025. So it was it a coincidence that all of this came together at that point?
Yeah, it really was. It was, I didn't expect, I mean, I grew up on country music, and I definitely enjoy writing, like, the narrative storytelling in country music. I'd never written country music before 2020, but I grew up on it. And yeah, there's this country, there's this, like, I guess, cowboy character in the show that is a hyper masculine version of myself trying to, you know, mask as something that I'm not, in order to, like, succeed in Hollywood. And I think throughout the show that just, like, slowly gets stripped away, and there's moments where I put the hat back on and it's, you know, putting the mask back on. And yeah, I really like flipping that on its head and being, you know, I don't know, just being like an out proud, like, country singer in my own way, I guess, even though I don't really identify as a country singer. It's kind of weird. Yeah. It's since releasing music, I feel like friends or family who I'm sharing it with finally, because I did keep it under wraps for so long, I feel like friends and family are like, oh, you're pivoting to country music. I'm like, no, it's really like a concept in within this show. I enjoy writing country music. I think it's really fun, but that's not the only kind of music I like to write or sing, you know.
You recorded the album in Nashville with an 8-piece band.
Yeah.
What did you learn about the songs when you took away all of that and it was just you on stage? Because this is stripped back, isn't it?
It is really stripped back. And the dream really is to perform it with the full band who is on board. And I, you know, watching videos of, like, my time in Nashville, I just, like, I really miss being with them. And I miss, like, I just saw a show in New York, and it was a one-woman show, and she had a band with her on stage, and I was just, I need to be doing it. I need that. Like, I want to talk to the band. I want to interact with the band. But yes, this version for Fringe, where it's very stripped back, and it's I'm doing it to the instrumentals, I feel incredibly exposed. I feel very vulnerable. I feel... yeah, there's nowhere to hide. I feel like I have yet to get sick of the music and, like, performing it. I really am still finding, you know, the moments, the arc, the journey, I guess.
So the show talks about breaking cycles of generational trauma. What was the moment you realised that this cycle was yours to break? I mean, I think everybody's got one, a cycle of generational trauma that they feel they need to interrupt. But yeah, what was the moment you realised, hang on?
I would say it was somewhere in my 20s. It was somewhere in my 20s, and it was honestly getting sober. It was getting sober, and that's really it.
I hear that.
I
had to do the same thing myself in 2012, so I can understand that. Was sort of drinking and partying, was it about the industry, or was the industry just somewhere convenient to do it?
I think that the latter. I think that I was more of a recluse. It kind of just I went pretty like internal, I guess, for the most part. I'd go out and I'd definitely party, and I would definitely go too far, and honestly, I haven't like really talked about this in so long, not even in like therapy or anything, but I would just numb out. I was just deeply unhappy, and definitely abusing my inner child by not, I mean, even starting to write the show, I was still like drinking and going out and doing stuff like that. And I wasn't focused on performing. And I knew that deep down I really wanted to. And I didn't feel like LA was a safe space to like debut the show. I didn't feel like it was a safe space to continue performing. I felt very like, just isolated, and I couldn't trust anybody. And you know, I had good times like on set in Hollywood, and on set in, you know, whether it was like a TV thing or a commercial thing or a movie thing. And I felt like they say like if you have like one good, like if you book something once a year, then keep going. So like I would book like one thing a year and then be like, okay, well, I'm just going to keep going. And that's like a lot of time in between. You know, and I think it just gets exhausting at some point. And
the show is a love letter to a single mother, yours in particular. Has she heard the songs? Has she seen the show? I hope so.
So she hasn't seen it yet.
Okay.
It's kind of a tricky thing. She, you know, a lot of it is about her, but a lot of it is about my relationship with her, my perspective, she asked if she'd heard it. She's actually, she started losing her hearing when I was like a young teen. It only progressed in the last few years. So she is, she's almost fully deaf, but she wears hearing aids, and so she doesn't, and she's a huge music head, and she has been able to like hear the music the way it was made. She likes songs that she knows really well. I showed this to her pretty early on in 2023. And she's supportive, you know. It's a lot. It's a lot. It gets pretty pretty deep into our stuff, and I feel like she's always been really supportive, and she still is. And though we disagree, like sometimes on stuff. But she's supportive. It is for her. Like it is for her. When we've done it in New York now, I'm like. My biggest takeaway is like this is all for her. This is all for her. Even the country music stuff, like it's that was a genre that she introduced me to as a very young kid. It was very much like growing up, I'd listen to a lot of John Denver with her, a lot of Arlo Guthrie, a lot of the Chicks, the JC Chicks, and a lot of Gordon Lightfoot. That's all stuff that she introduced me to, you know, and it's, she is very much in the DNA of the music.
I was just, as you were saying that, I was just thinking, how would my mum feel if I made a show about her? It's been done many times, hasn't it? Like someone's mother, the relationship between someone and their mother can be the inspiration for loads of literature, loads of art. What does your mum make of being at the heart of this? What are her feelings on that?
She sent a kid to art school, so at some point she maybe thought that kid is going to make a piece of art about me or about his life. So I hope that she wasn't too surprised. I think that, this is tricky because it's an ongoing thing, healing our relationship. It's been pretty turbulent, but I do think that, we're in a good place today. And we just take it one day at a time. But I know deep down that she's proud of what's going on. Yeah.
I'm going to ask a question. It's not really related to the show, but it is about your mum. What do you think your mother protected in you that the world tried to take?
Mm.
And if you don't feel comfortable answering that question, just tell me and we can move on. I'm really interested in this. Your reactions when you were talking about making some art about your mum and your mum's reactions and the ongoing. So many of us can relate to that. I certainly can. So many people can relate to that.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think just like the something that she really, really instilled growing up is to, like, as corny as it is, to just like not give up, like don't like quit pursuing your dream. She's always been so supportive, like of me in the arts. Like, you know, my brother was always like a sports guy, and she definitely grew up doing sports and resonated with that. And I think that I was a bit of a curveball and, you know, wanted to like sing and dance and stuff. And she was very, very supportive, like extremely supportive. I think that, she's definitely put her, she's always had an effect. Like her voice has always been in my head of like, like just keep going. She's from very, very early on. She's very, yeah, she's just, yeah, that's tricky. Yeah. Because LA was so, LA is just so image based and obsessed with like youth culture and that's hard for me to answer. I think
okay, these songs, they were your private songs, really, weren't they? Quite a while.
Yes.
What was it like taking those things that were really private and then making them really public and also handing them to a director to kind of execute?
Yes. Very challenging. That's been the hardest part. That's been like the hardest part, like sharing them, letting go of who will hear them, letting go of control, you know. I want to control how people hear it. I want to control like what headphones they use, like, you know, and I have to let that go. Like that's been a daily practice really since doing this show. But and we've released 4 tracks so far and one more next week. But that's been the hardest part. I really didn't start sharing the music until May, until this last May.
Wow. It's really recent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all 21 tracks have been in the can for at least 2 years. Except one, actually. One I just flew to Nashville in March to do, just, and it was always part of the plan, but wasn't sure when we were gonna do it. But yeah, all 21 songs have been done for a long time. And it's really been therapy. I've been gaining the confidence and the courage to share it. Therapy has been incredibly helpful with that. And also having a great director. I went to high school with my friend and director Coral, Coral Cohen. She, in 2023 or 2022, we had a meeting. She was in LA and we were just like, we were hanging out and it turned into a meeting. And I was like, Coral, I'm working on these songs. Can I show them to you? And she, and I played them for her acoustically. And she was like, okay, well, she's like, I think you have 2 shows going on. You have like a very like vulnerable one man show and you have like a cabaret style, like kind of like gay comedy thing. And I was like, okay, well, I think the one man show is really what I want to do. And she was like, okay. So she kind of like pushed me in that direction. And then cut to, 4 years later, it's January of 2026. And I'm like, Coral, I just like have to do this thing. It's like, I want to get it out of me. And I really need eyes and I need someone in the room to like watch me and direct me. And so Coral has been great. She's been incredibly supportive. And we've had a lot of like conversations about what you just said, sharing the music. And it's been tough. It's been like the hardest part. It's I have this weird thing of like, and maybe some actors, performers feel this way, but like I've always felt this desire to be seen, but also incredibly, I'm also very private, like it's
quite
weird.
Common,
like, I don't love to like, talk or share my secrets or anything, or like my private life. But at the same time, like there's been something else driving.
But at the same time, I do.
I
get that.
Yeah. And there's something that's been like driving the car this whole time. I've been saying like, I feel like I haven't been in the driver's seat really. I feel like I've been in the passenger seat, like kind of panicking this whole time.
Who's driving then? That's interesting. That is really just stood out with me then. Are you trying to work that out in therapy as well? Which I'm not trying to sound glib about this, but it's like, what is in the driver's seat? Why am I doing this?
The wise self we talk about. The wise self is the one driving the car. I think that they'll be my, young Joey is sitting in his lap and they're like kind of, they know what to do. And I'm, the self, and I'm standing by ready to, protect and make sure that we like, don't crash or anything. But, there's a lot of voices that are in the passenger or in the back seat. It's more of a bus, I would say. and there's so many parts of me on that bus. But the wise self, I'd say, is
young Joey
is driving that. Yep. And it's been that way this whole time. I swear. It's like, right. There's been a greater force here this whole time. Cause I think too, I'm not on social media, and I think I recently have had to get social media to promote the show, and I've peeked on it and I've poked around, and I have a very comparative mind, so I've seen other shows maybe with similar themes or stuff like that, and I'm just so grateful that I haven't been on that all these years, because I don't think this show would have gotten made. I think that I would have like driven off the road. I would have been like, you know.
Yeah. How interesting that you're not on social media. That's very unusual in the present day. Like, what was the reason for that?
Well, I think it really triggers me. It really, like, I feel like it's
a comparison thing.
Really comparative thing. I think it's a dark hellscape, and it's really there's no context for like what people post. Like, it's just like a picture of them looking really hot in Europe and doing their thing. And I get it. Like, if I were like, I would want to post stuff where I look good too. But it it's not real. None of it's real.
No.
And I for the show, I think that there's like, you know, I understand that it's the way that things get promoted, and I just, it's really tough because I feel like there's such a fine line between representing your art in like a cheap way versus a genuine way. And I'm trying to treat this whole Instagram thing like a website. Like, it is what it is.
It's a landing page. Just treat it like that. The more you can remove yourself from it emotionally, the more you'll be able to make rational decisions about it, because otherwise it's just noise. Exactly. Noise you can't switch off.
It's crazy. I just don't get it. Yeah. I feel like it's the epicenter of like everything that's wrong with society at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agreed. I didn't expect to have that conversation then, or know that you weren't, but I do agree. I wish I just could come off, but I'm addicted. First Fringe, ask you a couple of questions about that before we finished. Have you spoke to any veterans? Have they warned you about anything?
Yeah.
Are you excited?
Yeah. So my best friend did it last year. She helped out with a friend's solo show, and she said that I'm definitely going to want a vacation afterward, which I'm like, yeah. I don't know. I can already imagine like how exhausting it is. So, but other friends have said, take a vacation, flyer as much as you can, and really take care of your body and like, you know, and your instrument and just
your voice.
Stay up on your vitamins and stuff. So I have all my vitamins ready to go. I want to make a shirt that says like on vocal rest or something like to like because I'm it's a really vocally heavy show, and but I also want to like promote the show and flyer and you know, talk to people, but I get drained pretty easily. So I'm mostly nervous for being drained and being like not, you know, my most healthy self for the show, but I want to take care of
my
body.
There's only so much you can do, isn't there? So there's a certain amount of these real intense periods of just luck and adrenaline has to play their role in there. So listen, I think you're going to be fine. It's the new version of you. Just keep the just try and keep the young Joey, like, just keep your hand on the wheel as well.
Totally.
There's a life for this show beyond August, isn't there? And I think from talking to you, and is there like a second album in you? What are you wanting to do after Fringe?
So ideally, I mean, I would, like I said, I really want to do this with the full band. I feel like there is a version of this show where, you know, I get to use the band. I get to, you know, as people, as voices. There's a larger scale production of this show that I really would like to explore. So I hope I get to do that in New York. But as far as writing and stuff, there's definitely some stuff, some new material that I really want to. That was another thing too with like this show. It was like, I have to just get this out because I want to do the new stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So there's been some new stuff in the works for a while.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate the chat. The very lovely Joey Jennings.
Queer politics, sex, and culture. Outcast World.
So that was the very lovely Joey Jennings on for another few days here at The Fringe.
It's been brilliant being in this city for the last few weeks. I'll be sad to leave it. I will, even though I'm currently being absolutely hosed on by the gods. But I will be sad to leave Edinburgh. It feels like that every year when I pop up. The weather, though, as you can hear, has not held up in our favour on the last day. So that is nearly it from Edinburgh for another year. Thank you to everyone who gave us their time across the month. Dan Tiernan, Gareth Wall, Harrison Sweeney from Final Queen, Rich and Julia from Science for Grown Up, and of course, Joey. Big shout out, of course, to Em over at Act 1 PR, who's been an absolute star and made a lot of this possible for us. Hopefully, we'll be back again next year. Join me next time on that queer culture tip. I've got the brilliant Brummie musical genius Fat Butcher, who's about to go on tour with a huge I cannot believe how much it's raining Arts Council funded show. I can barely read what's written on the screen right now. It's about mourning the loss of our queer venues, so the plan is to turn every venue on the tour into a nightclub with a choir, and at one point the entire audience is invited to do poppers en masse. It's wild, and I'll have it being actually so from a absolutely biblically rainy Edinburgh, I'm jumping in a van and headed to an equally rainy Manchester for the last Pride of the year here in the UK, to Manchester Pride. We're wrapping up the summer there. And that is it from Outcast World in Edinburgh. We'll see you next time.
Stay with me. This is incredibly simple. If you've ever used Grindr, Googled something rather personal, or posted anything political, your data is already being tracked and sold. Think about that. A VPN can make you a lot safer. NordVPN takes about 2 minutes to set up, one click to turn on, and it just runs in the background. There's no effort after that. It's consistently voted number one across a load of metrics for consumers. It's fast, it's secure, and there's no drop-offs. Outcast World listeners can get up to 75% off NordVPN right now, which brings it down to under £3 a month. Go to outcastworld.net. Top of the page, tap the link, then you're done. Outcastworld.net for up to 75% off NordVPN.